Welcome to the Invest Smarter podcast, where you'll learn about the power of building wealth through real estate and how you can achieve financial freedom through multifamily investing. If you're interested in learning more about investing in multifamily real estate, head over to our website, sastexascapital.com, and take advantage of our free ebook, Multifamily Millions, How Anyone Can Invest in Apartment Buildings. Now, here's our host, Simon Castillo.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the Invest Smarter podcast. This is your host, Simon Castillo, and this is my opportunity to provide you with my best insights into the world of real estate investing, business, and entrepreneurship. So usually on this podcast, you know, we dive into various topics related to real estate investing, business, entrepreneurship. Sometimes I'll even have guests that can share their expert interviews to help enlighten and educate you on your journey in real estate investing. Today, what I wanted to do is kind of have a solo episode and talk a little bit about what, you know, the challenges that real estate investors and even homeowners, you know, face when dealing with contractors, general contractors. And if you're a homeowner, you've probably had an experience with a general contractor. If you're a real estate investor, you definitely have had an experience with a general contractor. And those experiences could be good or they could be bad. What I want to do today, though, is talk a little bit about why those experiences could have been bad, and then give you some insights and tips into how you can make sure that you manage your general contractors better in the future, whether you're a real estate investor or a homeowner in either case. So I think most of us have had a situation where we needed to have a renovation done, either on your personal residence or as an investor. You create a budget for it, you get started hiring a general contractor, and things start to move forward. And then, unfortunately, that's kind of where things may go wrong. I've heard of cases where contractors would just take the money and run, or maybe they cause lots of damage and it becomes very expensive to fix. You need to hire another contractor to come in and fix what the original contractor did. And that just becomes a mess for everyone involved. And I think from my perspective, I can kind of trace things back to the pandemic, as that's when a wrench got thrown into things, because not only did material costs go up, but then subcontractors got smarter in the way that they bid their jobs, but general contractors didn't. So, you know, all of a sudden a general contractor will say, hey, I'll do this project for $150,000. Then halfway through the project, that general contractor would find out that they're not making any money on the job. The subs are costing more, the materials are costing more, and they realize that they're doing the job for free. And the problem really is that they don't have that conversation with the homeowner. All they say is that they need more money, they want more money, or they're going to put a lien on the house. And there's better solutions to solve these problems than just you know, screwing over a homeowner by leaving the job or putting a lien on the house, or, you know, any of those things. And that's where, you know, that's where communication is so important, so that you really have to be able to sit down and have that difficult conversation, talk through it and understand, you know, hey, there's a problem and we've got to review this again. I feel like there's a bit of a lack of business etiquette out there with some general contractors, obviously not all, but with some. And then when there's a lack of business etiquette, and there's a lack of communication, you know, that's where things can just spin out of control. So from my personal experience, especially dealing with smaller, you know, what I would call mom and pop contractors, they're great contractors in terms of the quality of work, maybe not so great in terms of operating a business, because they got into the business because they enjoyed being a contractor, but not necessarily because they like running a business. So you lose some of the customer service aspects and some of the communication that needs to take place when dealing with some of these, you know, smaller, you know, mom and pop type contractors. The best situation is when a contractor can say to you, hey, this is what we did, and this is why we did it, and this is where we are now. And, you know, there could be a cause for contention on the work, but I think the problem still with mom and pop operators is just going to be they're not great business people. They're great contractors, but they just don't know how to run a business. And again, what I'm saying is not that they can't do the work. Smaller contractors, mom and pop contractors, can do absolutely great work. They can build you a gorgeous kitchen, but they lack the skills in terms of communication and maybe running a business. They probably don't have great operating procedures, you know, standard operating procedures, SOPs, but they may not be great with their finances. And again, you know, pre-pandemic, I think it was okay that contractors could rob Peter to pay Paul. In other words, they may have money from another project that they apply to a different project just to keep that project moving. And, you know, they could do that and it would still work out back then anyway. But things are different now after the, you know, post-pandemic. It doesn't really work anymore because I think to a large extent, homeowners have stopped paying contractors when they suspect that something like this is happening because there's a lack of trust. And now you'll have a general contractor that hasn't finished the work. There's a standstill. And then everyone's like, where's my money? And everyone's cool until money's involved. And again, that lack of communication is a reason why things blow up and because those contractors may not have the right systems in place. So for me, a big red flag when you're dealing with contractors, it can be a small cue that starts happening, but it's going to make you wonder what's going on. Typically what happens is they start asking for draws a little bit earlier, a little bit earlier, a little bit earlier. And that's usually a red flag for me that, hey, what's going on? You're requesting money too soon. Do you just need the money? Big red flag there. Another thing I see often is you'll have a subcontractor, like say for instance, an electrician who's in a, you know, electricians are in a great trade, but they're not general contractors. But you will see electricians, and I'll just pick on electricians for now, but maybe an electrician wants to make the jump to a general contractor. And again, it's kind of unfortunate because they are great at their trade, but they may not be great at general contracting. They don't understand all of the costs that are involved with running a general contracting business. Things like licensing fees, insurance, which is huge, payroll taxes, which are huge. And these things will snowball on them. And that snowball can then become detrimental to a renovation project because if they're running behind on paying for certain things that are involved in running their business, well, they could take some of that money that's involved in your project to help pay for some of those insurance costs or payroll taxes or licensing fees. And once a construction project goes awry, especially for an investor, your deal is dead. So it's very important to rein in contractors from the very beginning. So now that we have a little bit of an understanding about what's underneath some of the contractor issues and why we're seeing so many of these issues surface lately, what can homeowners and investors do to prevent these problems in the first place? So I think number one, that it's all about prevention. You know, as we're going through things that I've learned over the years, it's the utmost importance that you vet your contractor. The more organized you are as an investor by putting things into the construction contracts, maybe having a template, a written guide for yourself as an investor, or even as a homeowner, you know, the contractor can run their own processes. You have to have the right clauses within your contract that protect yourself and to a certain extent also protect the contractor. A good construction contract really ties the whole job together to where everyone's on the same page. You know, a lot of times we get excited, we have a property under contract, we want to hire a contractor, we want to get going, and we will skip these vital steps about vetting a contractor. So another thing that I see often with contractors is that they will often complain versus finding a solution, when really the solution is often just creating a system for themselves that protects them and the homeowner and is a system that just helps to get things done. Because in the end, that's really what everyone wants, is to get the job done. The contractor wants to get the job done so they can get paid, and the homeowner wants to get the job done. So if they're, you know, if they're a homeowner, they want to have their kitchen. If you're an investor, well, you want to have your property ready to either refinance or sell. Another thing that I think I attribute to the pandemic is that jobs now are taking longer. And jobs that may have taken 3 months before the pandemic are now taking six. And if it took 6 months, it takes a year. Permitting takes longer. All this kind of stuff related to, you know, contracting takes longer. And for a general contractor, what they have to do is they have to really strategize. They have to understand their cash flow situation so that they can continue paying their mortgage, car payments, paying for their kids, you know, for a longer period of time while the job is getting done. They have to factor in inflation and pricing. And if they can do this proficiently, they'll be fine. But if they don't, then they could end up in a situation where they could screw a homeowner. And, you know, whether the contractor is a good guy or a bad guy, they're a victim of their own circumstances. So as an investor, as a homeowner, when you're hiring a contractor, have a checklist, check references, check their licenses, check their bond status. Every time that you hire them, it doesn't matter if you've used them for jobs before, you have to run through this list every single time. Because it's possible that they let certain things lapse in the middle of a job. Maybe they let their insurance lapse because they couldn't make that payment. And those things can come back and really bite you. So it's important that you have a checklist and that you run through your checklist with a contractor every single time that you're hiring, even if you're hiring them again for another job and you've used them before. Second thing is to review the bid and make sure that it's itemized out by line item. Every benchmark in the construction project should have a dollar amount associated with every line item. You need to have dollars associated with it. You know, a construction contract that's signed means that you know what the payment schedule is, how it will work, who's responsible for what. What is the contractor responsible for, and what are you as the property owner responsible for? And the reason you want to do that is not only does it prevent mistakes and misunderstandings, but you can catch mistakes early on, because once these jobs snowball, and then, you know, they don't get on the contractor, it just gets out of control. And that's where the fire starts. And then at that point, it's like you can't control it, right? So I mentioned earlier, you know, a red flag that I look for is when a contractor is asking for money earlier and earlier in the draw process. So some other red flags I think that as investors and homeowners, you want to look for, again, don't go by reputation. Don't go by, I'm old school and I don't have an internet or websites. I'm just really good. Look, most contractors are going to say the exact same thing, whether it's a good contractor or a bad contractor, but you have to check references. And when I say references, I mean within the last year, year and a half. You know, it doesn't matter to me if they did Mr. Jones's renovation in 2010. I don't literally care, because that was, you know, 14 years ago. Prices are different. The economy is different. Just the whole real estate landscape is so much different than it was in 2010. What have they done successfully now in the past year, year and a half? And if you can do successful things in the past year, then I know that you understand your processes, your systems, your pricing, and I'll feel a lot better. So with a general contractor, look at the most recent projects that they have done and completed. And then I definitely do due diligence by calling on those references. So calling on those property owners and making sure I say, hey, can I stop by and maybe just take a look at the work that was done? I'm not trying to invade, you know, someone's privacy. I'm just trying to make sure that the person that I hired to handle my, you know, multiple $1,000 project is competent and knows what they're doing and is a, you know, a good contractor. I'm trying to make a good decision. And this is just part of the vetting process. You have to spend time on the vetting process and definitely follow up with real humans. We're in a day now where people can build a gorgeous website with AI in an hour and a half, and it'll make it look like they've done $100 million worth of work. So you have to do your due diligence in more detail than even before. So I talked a little bit about the contract, and the contract has definitely in the past protected me from multiple things and should clearly define roles as the property owner and the contractor, you know, the project manager, the subs, and the payment schedule. And I'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. But in the meantime, the homeowner's responsibilities should be on one sheet. So it's like, this is the timeline. This is this is when things are going to get done. And here are the systems in place that a contractor has to make sure that those things get done. It's important also to understand and agree upon what a change order looks like. And a change order is basically when something arises that is out of the original scope of work, and you both the contractor and the property owner, you have to understand what that process is going to be. Again, communication in order to avoid confusion. And when there's confusion, then no one really understands how to get the job done. And that's going to end up causing problems and delays, and you don't want to be in that situation. Understand what a change order is. Understand what needs to take place with the change order. What kind of communication needs to take place? Is it something that needs to be done in writing? If so, how long of a lead time do you need in order to submit a change order? Those are all the types of things that you need to understand about change orders. and make sure that it's clearly defined in your construction contract. Now, continuing on in terms of what to look for with a contractor, again, you want to make sure that they're bonded, that they're insured, like I mentioned earlier. But then on top of that, and making sure that insurances are up to date, I have seen contractors where they say that they're insured, but they stopped paying on their premiums like a year ago, and so their insurance has lapsed. And these are the types of things that you just have to continue to do your due diligence on. Now, a payment timeline, I think typically the way I organize things is we'll provide some sort of an upfront payment, typically no more than about 15 to 20% of the project amount. And then we will form some sort of a schedule in terms of tiers. That's where we expect things to be completed and by when. And then we'll do a review. And if they've done those things, then we'll pay them and then we'll move on to the next tier and so on and so forth. Typically, you know, a renovation project, construction project will have, you know, three or four tiers, again, depending on the size of the project. It could be more, again, depending on the size of the contract or the size of the project, I should say. And then also just put into the contract something stating like, we understand that things happen, material costs go up, or maybe you want to hire a different subcontractor that's better, more available, but that person may be more expensive. Again, communication here is key. Having that conversation between the homeowner and the contractor, that way the contractor can prove to the homeowner that this is an actual situation and not just an effort by them to try to get more money from the homeowner. Again, communication is key to maintaining, you know, trust between the homeowner and the general contractor. And if the contractor can show that this is an actual situation, well, then the homeowner can move forward. I tell people, you know, don't get emotionally involved because homeowners and contractors, you don't want to get into, you know, some sort of a disagreement, because again, disagreements just end up stopping work and end up causing delays, and no one ever really comes out ahead when there's disagreements. And something that you can actually do, I haven't actually done this myself, but I have heard from other investors that do this, is you can put your project funds into a bank, put it into escrow, give the bank all the information about your tier system, about what needs to take place before they issue a payment. And that way you put it on the bank in order to release funds. And the banks will be like, hey, we're not going to release any more funds until we get proof of, you know, that this has occurred or this has happened and this is complete. So now you as a property owner can take that off of your chest and you can be like, hey, you know what? You want more money, you want payment. Well, it has to go to the bank and they have to review and get proof of what you're doing, that you completed the next tier, and they'll do an inspection and then they can release the money once the inspection is done and they're happy with the results of the inspection. So by putting your funds into escrow at a bank, your hands are now free and the bank's going to go off, you know, whatever your construction contract says are the milestones and tiers, you know, within that contract. It made things go a little bit slower because you're adding, you know, you're at the mercy of the bank and when the bank conducts their inspections. But if it's safer to go slower and you don't lose money that way, it's probably worth it. Now, it's also important when you develop those benchmarks, because the riskiest point in a construction project is the first tier. So typically, like I mentioned earlier, you probably have some sort of a payment in the 15 to 25% range, again, depending on the scope of the project. But the most dangerous part of the renovation is going to be in that first tier, because you're diminishing the value of your property the day that they get into it and start ripping out the cabinets or start putting holes in the walls or ripping out flooring. When they do that, your house is not financeable anymore, meaning that a bank comes in, they're not going to allow you to refinance it. If you're trying to sell the property, they're not going to approve a loan on a property. So when you're doing these contracts, you want to make sure you have enough clarity of when your draws are scheduled and when and what is exactly the type of work that needs to be done so that a draw can actually be made. Make sure, again, in your construction contract that you highlight sections like this so that the contractor knows exactly what must be completed before the next payment. And then, like I mentioned earlier, you know, break it up into four or five payments across the timeline for the project. Have them sign it, because when they start asking you for money, you can meet them in person and say, hey, look, we all agree to the schedule. I want to pay you, but you just got to get this work done. And if you can get the work done, I will get you a check tomorrow. And again, that's usually a red flag if they start asking for the money a little bit earlier. And that's where, as an investor or a homeowner, you can step in and say, what is the real issue here? You know, what can we do to resolve this? Can I, you know, go buy materials for you and then you can install it? There's so many solutions. All it takes is some communication between you as a property owner and the general contractor so that you can avoid the conflict and figure out a way of how to fix the situation. And even in the most perfect world, when you have a contract and everything's lined out in your agreements and you're ready to rock and roll, there's still going to be those moments where there's miscommunications. That's just the nature of business. Again, I think it's going to come down to open, honest communication between the general contractor and the homeowner. And, you know, things can go both ways. I'm talking a lot about general contractors and the problems that they could cause, but homeowners can also cause general contractors problems if they're not, you know, crystal clear in what they expect, if they have poor milestones, if they withhold payment. You know, those are all things that homeowners that are poor, you know, partners in business can also cause lots of headaches, you know, to a contractor. So understand that and have a conversation, you know, before signing a contract. Define the roles and responsibilities. Understand as a property owner that the contractor will have a lot of things that they can't control. You know, they won't be able to control how fast permits get done. They won't be able to control inventory issues, supply chain issues. They won't be able to control inflation. Now, something else that a contractor may not be able to control is that when they start doing a demolition, what if they find asbestos? And instead of doing a demolition, well, that's going to turn into an abatement. And it's going to be, you know, three times more than what they originally thought the cost was going to be. And there are situations like that that may happen before they ever swing a hammer. But if there's communication between the owner and the general contractor, then it won't be, you know, it won't be one party coming to the other saying, well, you didn't tell me this was going to happen. You can actually say, you know, yes, actually I did, because there's things that I told you that weren't going to be within my control. Now you're free and clear and you can figure out things, you know, together. You know, just make sure that you as a homeowner understand that if you can communicate with your general contractor, they'll stick around. You know, you're going to be able to solve it together, but you have to both be logical and be willing to move forward. And it's all in the communication. I guess if everything that I'm talking about here today boils down to one thing, it's probably going to be communication. When there's no communication or there's miscommunication, when that breaks down, the job site just, it gets out of control, trust is gone. And that's where you want to go and meet people on site, walk it together, find a common solution between yourself as an investor, a homeowner, contractor. Sometimes you can figure out ways to around things. Maybe you can figure out a solution. Yeah, there's going to be times where it's just going to cost more money to fix something, but there could be other ways to get around it. But you can't find those things out if you don't have communication that flows both ways. As a property owner, as a homeowner, the last thing that you want to do is have a contractor that starts to put liens on your property. And I understand that there's contractors also that will do this because they're trying to bully someone into getting payment. But putting a lien on a property shouldn't be a contractor's first course of action. They should try to communicate with the homeowner to fix the problem. You know, they shouldn't be clouding your title so that you can't sell it or refinance it. You know, I know that there's things that you as an investor or homeowner can do to get past that, but you shouldn't have to. So again, if I'm summing up what I'm talking about in terms of experience dealing with contractors, I think it's going to come down to communication. You as an investor, as a property owner, have to communicate with your contractor, and your contractor needs to communicate with you in order to prevent issues from impacting the job that they're doing and the job that you need to have done on your property. So again, identify red flags early on when hiring contractors. Do your vetting, do your due diligence on contractors. Check their bonding, check their insurance, check references, and don't accept a list of references that are, you know, 10, 15 years old. But even if they provide you with references that are one and a half years old, make sure that you follow up and check those references and not just rely on the fact that they've provided you with a list of projects. Something that helps me out also that I talked about was creating a standardized checklist so that regardless if it's a new contractor or one that you've used before, you have your checklist and you can go through it during your due diligence phase. You can check off each item on your checklist and implement, you know, processes to help prevent mistakes and protect yourself as an investor and as a homeowner. And then also, like I mentioned, have a written construction contract that outlines, payment schedules, responsibilities, expectations, and make sure that you write out your project milestones to avoid delays and any potential fraud. So there you have it. Those are my kind of tips on how to navigate the world of general contractors. I think we've all at some point, if we're homeowners, if we're real estate investors, we've all had experiences with general contractors, both good and bad. I'm always curious to know from you, the listeners, what experience have you had, whether it was good or bad, with a general contractor? You don't have to name them, but if you want to share, email me, simon@sastexascapital.com. Love to hear about your experiences in dealing with general contractors. I know from talking to a lot of investors, one of the things that they have hated the most has always been dealing with contractors. But hopefully, if you implement some of the things that I've spoken about here today, your experience can be much better and much smoother when working with a general contractor. Now, maybe handling a general contractor and managing these types of projects or renovation projects is not what you want to do as a real estate investor, and it's not for everyone. But if you want to learn how to invest passively into real estate, I'm always looking for partners. You can go to sastexascapital.com and download one of our free resources or sign up for our newsletter, and you will be notified when new investment opportunities become available. Now, if you know someone that's looking to get started into investing in real estate and think this would be a great way to help get them educated, share the episode with them and maybe take a few seconds to leave us a rating and a review. Again, that goes a tremendous way to continue to help grow the show and to attract the type of content and the type of guests that you as an audience want to and need to listen to. So thanks again for listening to this episode of the Invest Smarter podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the Invest Smarter podcast, the show that educates you so that you can take control of your financial future. Be sure to rate the show 5 stars and leave us a review. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you automatically receive the newest edition of the podcast when it's released. If you're interested in learning more about investing in multifamily real estate and taking control of your financial future, head over to our website, sastexascapital.com, and take advantage of our free ebook, Multifamily Millions, How Anyone Can Invest in Apartment Buildings. And be sure to sign up for our mailing list to receive exclusive investment opportunities straight to your inbox. It's time to invest smarter. That's sastexascapital.com.